In the spirit of Charles Dickens and the holiday season, HVL is proud to bring you a Montreal Canadiens version of A Christmas Carol, starring Marc Bergevin.
Oh, what a terrible, terrible season it's been so far. Every single thing I've touched has turned to coal. The best thing about this season so far, though, is that I have saved over $8.5 million. And with that $8.5 million, I have done absolutely nothing with it. I am saving money just because I want to save money. Who could be at my door at this time of the holiday season? I'm drinking brandy. Come on. Bah, humbug. Rocket Richard? What are you doing here?
Mon Dieu, sacre bleu tabarnak. I am the ghost of Christmas past, here to ask you why you have forsaken our tradition and fans by creating a hockey product devoid of any offensive life and spark or energy.
Rocket, with all due respect, that was the 1930s, 40s, and 50s hockey. Today's hockey, we win by 1-0 and 2-1. I've got the best goalie in the world. Get the self gone. Another visitor? Who could this be now? Oh, jeez. What are you doing here, Mikhail Sergachev?
Привет, добрый день. I am the ghost of Christmas present, Mark. I play for the Tampa Bay Lightning, as you know. I'm very, very well regarded there. You know, the left-handed puck-moving defensemen are truly a rarity in today's NHL.
Mikhail, with all due respect, you're a left-handed puck-moving defenseman. I don't need any more of those. I've got myself a true number one center who's actually a winger, thanks to you. Be gone with yourself.
Liar!
Oh, please, please, who could this be now? It's Christmas. Ron McLean, what do you want?
Good evening, Mark. It's Ron McLean here with Hockey Night in Canada. I'm the ghost of Christmas Future here to show you what's in store for you in a couple of weeks. Don Cherry's wondering if you're going to come and join us for drinks this evening as we do screen tests and get you ready for your new future here at the CBC.
No! I'm a Hockey Night in Canada analyst. I thought I'd be on RDS.
Wow, your Marc Bergevin has totally not mellowed since Halloween.
Yeah, he has been under a lot of stress, and, you know, he had a little bit of a relief with that five-game winning streak, but, of course, poor Mark has come back down to earth and is having a terrible, horrible holiday season.
Listen, be thankful he even got this far. Oh, I don't know why you'd be thankful for that, but, I mean, if all things considered, I'm actually kind of impressed he's still around. I'm just wondering how much longer the team can afford to win a couple, lose a couple at this stage. It's going to take, what did you say, 750 ball, 750 hockey to get to anywhere?
Yeah, I haven't done the math in a while, but it's definitely 630 plus, which is very, very challenging, as it was like the Washington Capitals, who were the only team to be able to play at that level for a whole season last year. And despite them playing at that clip for a while, and actually a better clip, it's not sustainable. And again, the big worry was seeing... The big key to that being sustainable is Carey Price.
Yeah, yeah. And you weren't thrilled at all how he looked. He looked ginger. He looked tender. I think, like, within the first 5 minutes of that game on Saturday night, fans are scratching their heads wondering, is he right? Is he okay?
Well, that's the thing, because the beginning of the season, people were wondering about Carey, and some people were saying, well, maybe it's in his head. Then it came out that he was actually injured, and he took those 3 weeks off to heal the mystery injury that he had, came back, got the shutout, put them on a five-game winning streak, and then he goes out against Edmonton and doesn't look right. And he didn't look right in the fact that he looked hobbled by any fact. He didn't look right because his head didn't look into the game. I tweeted that I'm not a body language expert, but anyone who isn't a body language expert can see that he just looked lackadaisical. Playing the puck behind the net, I've seen him in practices and stuff where he's just, you know, kind of shooting it around, and he's not just really in the, you know, quick movements and more of a ready position, and that's how he looked. He just looked like he wasn't into it. He wasn't ready. He was just fooling around. So we could have used the Carey was injured before, and he actually was, but now that he's gone out and done that, again, people are going to start to wonder what's wrong with his head. What is going on in Carey Price's head? What's going on in Carey Price's personal life? Maybe those crazy rumors that have been flying around that I'm not sure what are, but maybe he's something's going on with that.
Those rumors are only damaging and toxic. I think we can agree. I don't like those rumors for so many reasons. Biggest one being that I think many of them are unfounded. And a lot of them have nothing to do with hockey whatsoever. And it's funny, isn't it? Like, goaltenders are a very sensitive breed of people. We've seen that over the decades and decades of the accomplished big stars in this game. They're all a little strange. If they're not busy offering $1 billion to avoid jail time, they're, you know, doing weird traditions, like you watch Braden Holtby and the way he does things in Washington. It's like, it reminds me of some of those baseball superstitions. And, you know, you look at Freddie Anderson on the Leafs side, he's had some bad months. He's had, I think, maybe three different months as a Toronto Maple Leafs goaltender where he's looked horrible, and yet he's rebounded, and he's even better than ever. I mean, is it strange to you that everyone's talking about Vezina consideration with a goalie that, quite frankly, you wouldn't even put in the category of elite?
Well, it's not strange to me that a Toronto Maple Leafs goaltender is being spoken about as a Vezina Trophy candidate, considering... Let's see, Jonathan Bernier, I'm sure, was being mentioned as a Vezina Trophy candidate. James Reimer was being mentioned as a Vezina Trophy candidate, especially by you. Vesa Toskala, how far back can we go?
Jonas Gustafsson.
Jonas Gustafsson.
John Sebastian Jaguar.
Jaguar, you were like, this guy could win another Vezina.
Hey, you can't blame a guy for hoping, right?
Conn Smythe Trophy winner. Yeah.
You can't blame someone who isn't used to the level of or the caliber of goaltending that your franchise has received in virtually every decade. Every decade, you always have that one goaltending hero that seems to show up, and now you've got him, and your media is eating him alive. I'm really worried about the future of Carey Price, and I'm not just saying that because I drafted him first in my hockey pool this year. You know, like, it's obvious something's going on. I'm really worried for the Canadians because as he goes, so does the team. And right now, I have no idea where they're going. They're like an absolute Christmas Carol limbo.
With Carey Price, and the only thing I can think of, and not talking about his personal life, because I have no idea. Nobody knows what's going on in Carey Price's personal life, and nor should people speculate about that, is maybe Carey Price's contract is weighing over his head. You know what? There's a lot of athletes who, after signing their big, big contract, are never the same. And I can't imagine that weighing down on Carey Price as he's the calm, cool, just chill guys person that he is. But I mean, apparently he's healthy. That's what we know. But his head doesn't seem to be getting back into the game, and I don't know what it is. Could he be upset about how the team is being structured, the direction of the team? I have no idea. Nobody has any idea.
And speaking of players with questionable headspaces or maybe not being all there like they should be, William Nylander played 8.5 minutes last game when the Maple Leafs prevailed over the Stanley Cup champions. I love saying that, by the way. You'll forgive me if it goes to my head, but I think anytime you play what should be your standard for determining how strong your team is and you can find a way to beat them in their rink, you're making progress. And I think the Maple Leafs are making progress with every week of this season. But William Nylander, I'm worried about him. Maybe I'm overstating it, but he seems to be so wildly inconsistent that at some point, maybe Mike Babcock will say, I can't get this kid to do what I need him to do within my system, so I'm going to use him to get a number one defenseman.
Very interesting.
Is that too bold?
It could be. I mean, the Leafs do need a defenseman. What I'm thinking, maybe, one, it's obviously Mike Babcock tough love in that he knows that this player is capable of more, and so he's giving him that tough love, trying to make him learn more about both sides of the ice and say, hey, you know, you're the future, we need you to be more. Or conspiracy theory is that Lou Lamoriello has, you know, he tapped Babcock on the shoulder and said, hey, We gotta make sure that we can afford this guy next year. I really need you to limit his ice time. I mean, that's a crazy conspiracy theory, of course, because the more goals that Willie scores, the more money he'll demand. So maybe, just maybe, it's a conspiracy.
Well, and let's assume for a second that the organization's already made up their mind about what they're going to do, because presumably when you're part of an NHL front office, you're not waiting for the wind to blow to figure out where you are in your season. There's no doubt in my mind that Shanahan, Lamoriello, and Babcock are unified in figuring out how they want to proceed towards the playoffs. They know they're going to make it, barring the proverbial, you know, cliff, train over the cliff. What is it? Trailer over the cliff, tractor over the cliff. Help me here. What is it?
I think the when the truck went over.
That's
the cliff.
That's it.
Was it the truck?
Exactly. So rather than waiting for the 18-wheeler to go over the cliff.
That was it. The 18-wheeler that went over the cliff.
So rather than waiting for the 18-wheeler to go over the cliff, I'm thinking that this Maple Leafs team has a pretty good idea of the kind of personnel moves they need to make. And lately we've been hearing a lot about Drew Doughty, and I've been hearing a lot about Oliver Ekman-Larsson, primarily granted from my own mouth. But don't you think that that's what would really secure this Maple Leaf team as a bona fide contender? And until they do that, they're basically a very, very good hockey team that has to prove they can beat the Lightning?
Yes, that would definitely put them over the top, as the formula generally for the past, I don't know how long, is that a team needs a true Norris Trophy caliber winning defenseman to win the Stanley Cup. But I keep going back to the Pittsburgh Penguins, where they did it without Chris Letang and others, and were led by a smorgasbord of no-name defensemen. So, that being said, yes, that'd put them over the top. Do I think it's going to happen? No. There's no way it's going to happen. LA is going to lock them up. But you know what I heard, speaking of people who want to get max money, is that Eugene Melnyk was not happy at all that Erik Karlsson said he's not going to take any sort of hometown discount.
Well, and how could he? I mean, we hear that a lot in sports, right? We heard that with Jose Bautista on the Blue Jays side, which was like the cause of your amusement for about 3 months. Mm-hmm. Imagining how an athlete can do that, except for the fact that in Jose Bautista's case, we already knew he was well past his prime and clearly was asking for unreasonable money. Erik Karlsson, presumably when healthy, is considered the best NHL defenseman. Shouldn't the best NHL defenseman be saying things like that? Or maybe do you think that he shouldn't have even mentioned it until contract time, and now an owner is going to take exception that he's got an unruly employee? I mean, it's a little bit patronizing, I think, that Melnyk would even take that approach.
Yeah.
He's Erik Karlsson.
I completely agree. Karlsson deserves every penny that he should demand.
Sure.
But it's ironic that the timing of him saying this is coinciding in the middle of one of the worst slumps of his career.
Oh, boy.
It's like,
it's bad.
It's like, Eric, what are you doing?
You know,
be quiet and go out and get some points and help your team turn this thing around.
It's so funny. And of course, timing is everything. I mean, it's one thing to have a contract demand or stipulate that you're deserving of certain consideration if you can walk the walk and talk the talk. And unfortunately, right now, when you're mired in a, 10-game streak without a point, and he's minus 15 during that stretch, I'm sorry, but that, you know, with defensemen like that, who needs enemies?
Mm-hmm.
You know who earns every penny they make? It's our guests on tonight's show. It's absolutely out of this world. We've got Justin Bourne and Eric Engels coming up. That's pretty damn good.
It is really damn good. Really damn good. And they bring a lot to the table. There's a lot of interesting stuff that Eric and Justin speak about. And, really brings some insight into what's going on into the wonderful world of hockey that we podcast about.
Bah, humbug.
Hockey is entertainment. Hockey is entertaining. Obviously, very subjective statements. But I do love watching hockey. I love being entertained by the sport of hockey, watching great players do great things. The Sidney Crosbys of the world, Johnny Gaudreaus, Erik Karlssons. That's excitement. You know what else is entertaining in hockey? The action, the skills, the great shots, the physicality, the beautiful plays, the great saves. That's entertainment. That's entertaining in hockey. You know what else is entertaining in hockey? Or what can be entertaining in hockey? Is actually the organist. The organist playing their songs can actually be entertaining. The anthem singer. The coaches with their tirades. That's always funny to see. The mascots. Mascots can even be entertaining in hockey. You know what shouldn't be entertaining in hockey, though? NHL officials. And by that specifically, I mean Wes Macaulay. Now, when you're watching Wes Macaulay, and I think I'm in the minority here, a lot of people seem to love his calls at center ice. When he's making the 5 minutes for fighting call with the kung fu gestures, people love that. When he's making the goal or non-goal calls at center ice with a dramatic, pregnant pause, people are loving that. I'm not. NHL referees should not be getting fans on the edge of their seat with calls. That's just not their job. Now, think about it. Name another NHL official. You can't. You know why? Because you're not supposed to. NHL referees are just supposed to blend and fade into the background and not be noticed. They're not supposed to provide entertainment. Let me put it another way. Scenario. PA announcer on a goal or a non-goal call makes a pregnant pause and says it's a goal, thus getting the home fans riled up. Now, isn't that kind of what Wes Macaulay is doing? Let's say on a goal or a non-goal, Wes Macaulay goes in front of the home fans, makes the pregnant pause, gets them a little bit more excited, and then says it's a goal, and they just erupt with excitement. NHL officials are not supposed to provide excitement. I'm sure Wes Macaulay is a great, funny guy, you know, in the officials' dressing room or at any luncheon that he's at. I'm sure he's funny. But he does not need to be funny or entertaining at center ice of an NHL game. Just stick to making the right calls, stick to being boring, stick to blending into the background. We don't need to know who you are.
You know, in the spirit of Christmas, it might be wise for the NHL to once again revisit its concussion protocol procedure to try to understand why it's become so incredibly political. And I mean just that. You're thinking, hey Ari, what does that mean, political? Well, consider this. In the late stages of their game against the Pittsburgh Penguins, Austin Matthews suffered what could best be described as a textbook example of why you would take him off the ice and down the hallway to be analyzed in the concussion protocol safety room after getting a horrible, horrible blow delivered from the front end of Morgan Riley's skull against his chin. It was clear he was in pain, it was obvious that he needed to be taken off the ice, but given the fact that it was, again, the late stages of a very critical game against the defending Stanley Cup champions, the decision was made to not even bother with it, leave him in, and then hope he'll be available for the following game, which we now know is in serious doubt. Whether or not Austin ends up playing against the Edmonton Oilers at home is less of a concern to me as wondering why we've become so incredibly political in the way that we deal with this concussion protocol. Even Mike Babcock himself, when asked about it, simply dismissed the reporter's question, gave him a four-word monosyllabic answer. In my books, that's simply not going to cut it. If we know that the process is one that can be done arbitrarily and could be influenced by whether or not head coaches or GMs want their players on the ice at crucial times, we have to call it what it is, a fair-weathered system of basically playing fast and loose with the health of the most important part of the NHL, the players themselves.
Our special guest today on Habs Fan vs. Leafs Fan is a senior NHL columnist for the Athletic NHL. He's also a Leafs analyst, a regular on Rogers Sportsnet, the Fan 590, and was the Toronto Marlies video coach from 2015 to 2017. Justin Bourne is on HBL. Justin, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I know we've been going back and forth, and we were finally able to find the time to do this, Justin, so I'm going to get right to it. I have a couple of questions for you that I'm really fascinated about that I want to pick your brain with, starting with what I like to call the William Nylander question. I know you played in the NCAA, ECHL, AHL. You even had an NHL tryout, which kudos, by the way. That makes you like a really multifaceted, truly versatile hockey guy. So you're extremely familiar then with how players develop and mature. How do you feel about all this intrigue with what the Toronto Maple Leafs are trying to do with a player that really, I think you'll agree, has been all over the place this year?
Yeah, you know, I had him in with the Marlies there for one season and got to know Willie a little bit and got a firsthand look at his game on a nightly basis. And I think, you know, what he's shown so far is basically what the player is. He is a highly skilled player who can be a game breaker. He has exceptional talent. You know, he's smooth and he can control a hockey game if he's engaged. You know, all of those things can be there if you can keep him engaged. And when he's excited to play and feeling good about himself, he's really good. But there are nights, you know, a Tuesday night in Ottawa or something in the middle of the season where he's just not going to want to play. And it's interesting. At the same time, it's almost good for the Leafs that this season it hasn't been that great because, you know, they got to make a contract decision on him. They may have a chance to get him cheaper, even though he still has this crazy high-end ceiling. He's a great talent. But I don't really foresee things changing. I know Mike Babcock has a spectacular way of molding guys the way he did, you know, Nazem Kadri. He took him from someone who wanted to be a scorer to a 200-foot player. And, you know, I'll be impressed if he can convince Willie on a nightly basis to try to play because some nights he's just not engaged.
Do you think from Mike Babcock's perspective that makes him a potential trading chip in lieu of all this murmuring that we're hearing about how the Maple Leafs might consider going after, let's say, a number one defenseman or going after a certain level of depth that might encourage a playoff run? Is Nylander a player, in your opinion, that should be considered someone that the Leafs wouldn't build around and might actually use to improve their team?
Yeah, to me, you have to hang on to him. I think the toughest thing in hockey, and this is just my opinion, the toughest thing in hockey is to score goals. I wrote a little bit about that yesterday, about creating offense. And it's so hard in the game today to put pucks in the net. You know, the goals are up a little bit this year, but historically they've just been coming down, down, down. Goalies are getting better. And you need those game-breaking talents to win tough games. You know, when you're down two goals, you need people who can score. You know, like I said, when Willie's engaged, he's really good. And if you could have him engaged to, you know, it'd be playoffs. He was very good for the Marlies at times in playoffs. You know, I think he's someone that he'd be an untradeable asset to me still. He's still so young. You don't really know how high his ceiling is going to go. You would have to get back a special defenseman. You know, it's not like he should really be untradeable. There are some names out there where you'd consider it, but I certainly wouldn't be out there shopping him. I don't expect they are either.
And it's interesting, as someone who's been watching all the games this year, and I'm sure you've got your own opinion about how the team is performing at this kind of expected full throttle level, we can both agree they haven't really been firing on all full cylinders yet, which is really astounding because here we are, you know, past the quarter mark of the season. Do you see them as needing to make a trade or some kind of major personnel decision to get to the point where you're convinced that if the playoffs were to begin tomorrow, that this team could make some serious noise?
Yeah, I think they need help. I don't think they're there yet. I think their record probably looks a little shinier than it is. In particular, like the Atlantic Division, it's crap. You know, there's Tampa Bay, and that is it. I'm telling you, man, there's not another team that's a threat in that division. So, well, you know, Montreal fans are going to be mad at me now, but I don't think they're on the Leafs level. I don't think they're on the Leafs level, and I still think the Leafs, if they want to compete with Tampa and eventually Pittsburgh when they right their ship and, you know, some of those power teams out west, I think they'll need a defenseman or two maybe. And I don't think they're going to let the deadline pass without making an addition because I think they're close and they want to start taking a run at this thing for real.
Now, of course, Montreal Canadiens fans and the Habs fan in particular would obviously not be thrilled to know that they're not considered a contender. But I'd like to get your impressions on this recent turnaround where the Montreal Canadiens went from being regarded as having an annus horribilis, as they say, and still feel that they should be taken seriously as an Atlantic Division playoff contender. What are your impressions about this recent turnaround, and is this an apparition, or do you see them gradually getting back to the point of respectability?
Well, you know, I think you got to consider one thing in the NHL today. There's a lot of parity, and you still have to beat the bad teams. So I know people are looking at their winning streak there and saying they didn't beat the best teams, but you still got to beat them. And and I thought that showed some resilience from the Habs. They're not rolling over. The season's not done. They still can be a playoff team. Actually, if the playoffs started today, the Leafs would play the Habs, which would be a boatload of fun. But, yeah, I think they're somewhere in the middle. You know, at the start, everyone thought they were terrible. Or for a while there, everyone thought they were terrible. And then everyone thought they were great on this run. I think they're pretty middling. I think they're another team who will look to add. You know, Bergevin's been an aggressive guy, and I think he probably can feel the hot seat a little bit under him. So, like I said, I think they're middling, and I think they're going to add to get better. So I think they'll be around come playoff time, you know, and hopefully face the Maple Leafs and give your podcast a little extra boost.
Boy, wouldn't that be something? Believe me, that's the dream scenario, to be sure, to have them both in the playoffs. In fact, I'm not sure. I didn't look at the standings today, Justin, but I think yesterday, had the playoffs started tomorrow, it would have been Toronto and Montreal in the first round. Tell me, for both millennials, Gen Xers, and baby boomers out there, what would that mean to have a Habs versus Leafs round one battle royale?
Well, it'd be so special. I mean, the Toronto Maple Leafs were so bad for so long that, you know, there were generations of kids, or, you know, 20, 30 years of kids that grew up without getting to experience, like, what that rivalry really meant. And now that it matters again and people are interested, you know, there was just general malaise and disinterest from a lot of people in Toronto about the Leafs. They were just looked at as hopeless. So, you know, Montreal's at least always kind of been up and down and involved, and the fans are still passionate and all that. But there was some bleak, lean years here in Toronto. So to sort of renew that and have another page in the history book between these two franchises, it would be a lot of fun.
And I'm sure you'll agree, great validation of that huge billion-dollar investment by Rogers when it comes to getting eyes on the screen and subscribers. This would probably be the greatest marketing initiative ever, I suppose.
Oh, God, can you imagine how bad they want this to happen? I think the other first round of the playoffs was like Tampa Bay and Pittsburgh, another awesome series. So, yeah, a lot comes down to that for the TV network, that's for sure.
No question about it. The other night against Calgary, and you've written extensively on what the NHL looks like offensively today, how the game is evolving. You know, in particular, you have this great article out that looks at 5-on-5 in the offensive zone. But I got to tell you, Justin, watching that 3-on-3 overtime the other night and the shootout, you can lump them together, was probably some of the most exciting hockey I've seen this year, which really shouldn't surprise either of us when you've got guys like Johnny Gaudreau and William Nylander flying up and down the wing on a, you know, positional battle. What are your impressions about 3-on-3 to date? I know it didn't start off that well, and there were real rumblings from hockey purists that it might ruin the game in some ways. How do you look at 3-on-3 overtime hockey today?
I played 3-on-3 overtime hockey when I was back in junior, like many, many years ago. We were in the BCHL, it's a junior A league. It was one of the first leagues to adopt it. And so I actually got to play it, and it was electric. It was what you saw last night. It was so much fun. It was fun to be on the ice and scary to be on the ice at the same time. It was awesome. So when I came out of hockey and turned to writing, it was right around the time they started discussing bringing in the 3-on-3. And there was a lot of people pushing back against it. And I wrote an article, I don't know, almost 9 years ago now, just telling everyone, do it, do it. This is incredible. I've loved it, ever since I first saw it in action in the BCHL. So I am a diehard 3-on-3 fan. I think they should extend it. I don't see any reason. I like the shootout fine, but I don't see any reason, you know, this many games should even go to a shootout. Make it 7 minutes, make it 10 minutes. Let's just, someone's going to score if you have another few minutes of that hockey game we watched in overtime the other night. It was so fun.
I love everything you said, because the truth is that That kind of spectacle is a rarity in a professional sport, where there's an almost wonderment, childlike glee of seeing the way opportunities and scoring chances are exchanged. You know, it makes me wonder, what's the official born formula when it comes to building a successful NHL Stanley Cup contender? I mean, do you subscribe to the Pittsburgh Penguins model of two elite centermen, a stud defenseman, and riding a hot goaltender? I'm wondering what your perception is of this formula, and if someone were to come to you and say, hey, if we make you a GM tomorrow, how would you build your team compared to what the mainstream looks at as a recipe for success?
Well, I think the biggest thing in hockey is having difference makers. You know, you can have a solid team top to bottom, but if you don't have those guys, and this is why I feel the way I feel about William Nylander, if you don't have those breakout players, I mean, you're just not going to win those close games. When the games get really tight and you need someone to make a special play, you look at who's won the Stanley Cup the last, whatever, 7 years.
Yeah.
You look at your Chicago's with Taves and Kane and even Duncan Keith, and then Pittsburgh with Crosby, Kessel, Malkin, Boston with Bergeron, Chara. You know, you have to have special players. The Kings had Doughty and Kopitar. Like, Carolina won the Cup in 06 or whatever with nobody. Hasn't happened in 11 years since. Prior to that, I don't know when the last time was, but it just doesn't happen often. You got to have special players. So whether that means tanking, making big trades, whatever you got to do, I think you need to have some foundations to build your house on.
And a lot of luck, a lot of karma banked up.
Of course, you need a ton of luck in hockey.
Sure, absolutely. So you can get Daly or Bettman to flip over the right card, as they say, and let you basically change the fortunes of your entire franchise.
And that's it. Look at Toronto and Matthews.
Absolutely. It also, I think, demonstrates what happens when you don't draft effectively. We came from a time here in Toronto where the phrase draft schmaft was initially something that people used to giggle or point out as an example of being too aloof. I guess you can't have that in today's NHL game. If you don't draft well, you are not going to have a future in this league when it comes to parity.
Yeah, and that's it. The teams are so close together, and it's so tough to acquire a top pair defenseman or a top center, so you kind of have to get them in the draft, and it can be a crapshoot, sure, but when you hit on one and you look at the Edmonton Oilers, you got to surround them as soon as you can with talent, or you can go back in the tank. So it's certainly important to do well in the draft.
Justin, I want to take a moment to close up this wonderful guest spot by asking you your thoughts on the journey that you've taken, spending, I believe, 5 years at the Score and then bringing all your wealth of hockey knowledge and practical on-ice experience to the Athletic. What's that been like? And maybe tell our listeners here at HVL what they should know about the Athletic when it comes to the NHL.
Well, it's been interesting. And I'm sort of unique in the media world in that I played, professionally and in college, and then I'm writing about the game. There's not a lot of people with the playing experience, I don't think. So for me, it's been really cool because the Athletic offers me the freedom to write about what I want. Today's a good example. I wrote an article called 10 Little Leafs Things from Last Night, and I just little things I noticed about the game that, I learned as a video coach or saw within the Marlies, or at least in Marlies organization, that I can see that some other people maybe can't. So I clipped the video and sort of highlighted those. And I think I'm able to provide something a little bit unique, I hope. And the Athletic's a great spot for it because they let me do, whatever I want in that regard. So the freedom's been really nice. And I think the rest of the content on the Athletic has been really exceptional. And I think hockey fans are better for having it, and hopefully more people buy in soon.
Wonderfully put. His name is Justin Bourne. You can find him on Twitter at JT Bourne. He is a senior NHL columnist with the Athletic NHL at the Athletic NHL. Justin, thank you for taking the time to chat with me here on Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan.
Thanks for having me.
So, Kamal, did you know that our first guest on this great episode of HVL is entering his 10th season on the Montreal Canadiens beat? He joined Rogers Sportsnet in 2015 as a staff writer and has since become a well-recognized, highly critically acclaimed insider and commentator on regional broadcasts of the Canadiens. Eric Engels is on the show. Thanks for joining us here on Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan.
It's my pleasure. We got to adjust that bio. It's actually my 11th year covering the Canadiens, but we move. That's probably my fault. I got to send in the update.
Eric, I want to start by asking you, Montreal followed that glorious 10-1 drubbing of the Red Wings with really tough losses recently against both the Blues and the Flames. Did your perception of this team change in any way after their recent stretch of success? And do you still believe they can make the postseason with this current roster as is?
$9 million they have in cap space is going to be a pretty valuable commodity in enabling them to potentially do that. The other side of it is that their division is the poorest in the NHL. Like, there's the, that in itself gives the Canadiens a chance to make it. But, these last two games that they played, if people want to look at them as sobering reality bringing losses, I don't really see them that way. I kind of see them, though, as real missed opportunities, because I think the Canadiens played well enough against the Blues and well enough last night, for sure, to win both games and ended up losing them. And given the start that they got off to, they can't afford to do that. There's really very little margin for error for a team that starts the season at 1-6-1 and ends up throwing in a 5-game losing streak on top of that. So, it's early in the season still. There's a lot of room to make up, but this team, in my view, is an average team. And until they spend that money, and it's a very difficult task to do in season to bring in players that can make a significant difference without giving up assets that you really need to build towards the future, you know, I'm not going to view them as anything but an average team.
Interesting.
Eric, you mentioned that with them being an average team, so Bergevin famously said that they're part of that cluster of the teams trying to make the playoffs. Do you see them as the plan being to make the playoffs or just to finish out of the playoffs? What do you see as the plan for Bergevin? Should that be, you know, just to make the playoffs and then, you know, face a tougher team versus blowing up the whole roster as some of the fan base wants to, them to do? Do you see this as being something to continue doing, or should they blow it all up?
Well, it's funny, like, the one statement that Bergevin made this year that is undeniable is that they are a pack. They're in that cluster of teams, and when you look around the NHL, there are so many of them that are remarkably average. How many teams would you really say are truly good in this league right now? Like, Tampa Bay is in a league of its own. St. Louis is a really good hockey team. You know, Anaheim is probably on the rise when they get Kessler and Getzlaf back. Calgary, in my view, is a good team. Winnipeg is a very good team. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh and Washington are probably underachieving to this stage of the season, but are they truly great? They have great components, but are they truly great and on the same level as those other teams that I just mentioned? I'm not sure yet. And then there's everybody else. And then there's a couple teams at the bottom that are truly awful so far. So, you know, Mark Bergevin is in year six of a five-year build. The aim absolutely at 100% has to be on making the playoffs. And I'll say this, you know, for everything I said about them being an average team and competing in a very weak division, which gives them an opportunity, I am a believer that when the playoffs do roll around, anything can happen. They're going to need help with what the roster they currently have that's in place. I think January 15th is probably a make or break date for them. They'll have gone through their 8-game road trip through Florida and Carolina and the Western Conference up until that point. They'll have portioned through halfway through their schedule. If they're under 500 sitting at a playoff spot at that point, I think the reality becomes that much starker that they could potentially move a couple of key pieces off their roster to improve moving forward. As far as a full rebuild is concerned, it's not going to happen. And it doesn't need to happen either. It's just not the way it works in the NHL now. You can retool pretty quickly. You have foundational pieces at certain positions. Carey Price is still, in my mind, the best player at his position. Shea Weber, in my mind, is still one of the best players in the world at his position. Jonathan Drouin is on the rise. You know, from there, you have to try and build the pieces around that in your core, because the Canadians have plenty of good support players that can do well with a really good core.
And there's a lot of doom and gloom, and I like to balance it out a little bit with some positive aspects of the team that have been happening. And can you let us know how good Paul Byron has been for the team?
Yeah, I think everybody sees how good Paul Byron has been. And, you know, it wasn't necessarily the best start to the season for him, but it wasn't that for anybody on this team. And, you know, when you have a player that you can move up and down the lineup and play in every situation, and a player that plays at his speed and with his tenacity, you have a player that becomes ultimately one of your most useful ones. He's not going to be ever considered a superstar. He's certainly not paid like one, but he's worth every penny that you pay him. And I remember very distinctly what the reaction was when Mark Bergevin signed him to what I think was a 3-year deal at, you know, just over $1 million or whatever. You guys can check the cap numbers. I'm missing it off the top of my head, but the reaction was kind of like, why would you sign this guy for 3 years? And it ends up being probably the best value deal that Mark Bergevin has made outside of Carey Price and Max Pacioretty. So, yeah, I mean, he's come exactly as advertised and if not much better, and that's great news for the Canadians.
Eric, we know that the Maple Leafs have their own priorities when it comes to solidifying their team.
Still some warts out there. You know, we asked previous guests and other Montreal authorities like Andrew Berkshire and Mark Dumont their impressions of the Toronto Hockey Club. I'm curious, how far ahead do you feel the Maple Leafs are in their vaunted rebuild? And what surprised you most about their efforts in becoming a bona fide contender, and I put that in quotations, in this league this soon?
How far ahead are they? Let me think of the best way to explain that from my perspective. William Nylander is supposedly struggling right now, and I know he's taking a lot of heat in the Toronto market. Like, I watched the game that he played against Calgary. He's unbelievable. This guy has so much talent and so much ability, and he's kind of a perfect micro sample of exactly what the Leafs are all about. He's built in every which way to be successful. Are there growing pains to go through as he figures out the defensive side of the game, as he, you know, figures out the details of the game, ensures not to cheat the game? I think you can see that up and down the roster. Same thing with Mitch Marner. But when you have two guys like that that are so talented and they're considered to be struggling, and they still do things every single game that make you kind of like your eyes just pop out, like, wow. I mean, the future is extremely bright in Toronto. The biggest thing that I see right now, which makes a huge difference, is the way Freddie Anderson is playing. I don't think I've ever seen, I know he's played really well for the last month and a half. I've never seen him play as well as he did against Calgary Flames on Tuesday, I think it was, or Wednesday. So, I mean, that is a huge, huge asset moving forward. If he can continue that way, the problem I see there is that for his entire career to date, he has had lapses of just kind of a complete lack of focus, and it's screwed him up and it screwed them up. And the question is, can he find a level of consistency that he hasn't been able to exhibit? Because if he plays the way he played against Calgary, he's not going to play the way he played against Calgary every game, but if he plays near that level, he gives this Leafs team a better chance than even all the hypers would have given them before the season. I mean, yeah. I don't think they're winning the Stanley Cup this year, but they're doing everything the right way and really going in the right direction here. And management has just done an incredible job creating a culture there. And that goes a lot to do with Lou Lamoriello and Brendan Shannon, and as much to do with Mike Babcock. And when you get a player like Austin Matthews, the sky's the limit.
Eric, you mentioned William Nylander, and there's a little bit of talk in Toronto about him playing center. And of course, in Montreal, we have Alex Galchenyuk and the debates about him playing center. And as I was watching the game last night, I found, hey, the talk of Galchenyuk and any of the controversies have kind of died down. And then lo and behold, he plays less than 10 minutes last night. And Claude Julien was a little critical about his play, saying that he wasn't strong enough along the boards. What does the future hold for Alex Galchenyuk and the Montreal Canadiens?
I really don't know. You know, it's on the one hand, I see a player that, look, it's not a secret. They tried to trade him, you know, last summer. They were unsuccessful in doing so, and they weren't just willing to give him up for a deal that would have put them on the losing side of it. And they end up signing him to a three-year deal at $4.9 million a year, which when you look at what his potential is, it ends up being a great deal if he can produce. So the frustration level with Galchenyuk clearly at a tipping point with Claude Julien, because I'll tell you this, this is a coach that goes out of his way not to name names. And he's also a coach that's a terrible liar. So sometimes he gets put on the spot, and he couldn't hold himself back from answering the question last night. You know, he was asked about Galchenyuk's play and just basically said he's got to win his board battles if I'm going to trust him. And, you know, it's not just enough to score goals or whatever it is. You have to – they can't just put up with his defensive liabilities also if he's not going to produce. And he's not producing to the level that's expected of him. So, oh, you know, I have mixed feelings about this player. I think for the 5 years leading into this one, the fan base was borderline delusional about – the organization and the way they treated him. You know, ultimately I thought his failings up until that point were largely on him. Now we've gotten into a situation where you go back to the end of last season where Marc Bergevin said, oh, he took two steps back and we're hoping he'll take a step forward. You have him and Claude Julien talking about the impossibility of seeing him at center again. And I can't help but wonder what kind of psychological damage some of these comments have made and the treatment that has followed. So I will say this. Julien has tried to be an ally to Galchenyuk. They've had a lot of one-on-one time together. They've done a lot to try to boost his confidence. He's an exceptional talent who could be a game-breaker at any given time. But just like Willie Nylander or anybody else, if you are going to cheat the game, you're not going to be in good favor with a coach and a detail-oriented coach like Claude Julien or Mike Babcock. So we're at a crossroads with this player. I don't know what the future holds with him in Montreal. You know, part of me feels like you have this asset at $4.9 million for 3 years. That's the kind of value you need in order to be successful in the NHL and the salary cap world. The other part of me feels like, are these guys, Bergevin and Julien, going to get the best out of this player given where the situation has gotten to? And if they're not, and if things are not going to change, the issue is, you know, if you trade him, you're going to lose the deal. he's going to be successful somewhere else. He's going to get that lift playing somewhere else, at least right off the hop. And I think right now it would be hard to convince another team that he's worth the type of assets you want to get for him. So it's a real tricky situation. For me, the best case scenario is they work with him and they try to get his game to where they want it to be, because he could be a great asset for them.
Mm-hmm. Another player in Montreal that faces a lot of criticism, obviously, is the captain, Max Pacioretty. And it's a little bit of a different situation compared to Galchenyuk because of his contract status. But again, is there a long-term future with Pacioretty, as some people see that he should be potentially trade bait to help out this team? What are your thoughts on that, Eric?
My thoughts are in 2019, when Max Pacioretty's up for a contract, he has earned himself a 6 or 7 year deal at upwards of $7.58 million. And I have a very hard time believing that the Canadians are going to commit that money to him just because of the nature of the position he plays. You know, they have to build this roster up the middle and on defense when they have Carey Price anchoring it with a $10.5 million salary. So I can see a scenario that sees Pacioretty traded potentially by the deadline, traded potentially by July 1st. I have a hard time believing it'll make it all the way to next deadline, but the hardest scenario for me to believe is that Max Pacioretty is going to end up in a Montreal Canadiens uniform 2 years from now. And that really comes down to the fact that he signed a 6 year, $4.5 million salary in his last deal, ended up firing his agent because of it. You know, it's really undervalued. And he has no reason or incentive to sign a hometown discount. Like, we should just get rid of the concept of a hometown discount. It doesn't exist. It's a fantasy that most fans have, and they eat up the narrative of a player saying, I really want to stay and I love it here. And this, every player wants to stay with their team and they love it and this and that, but they have a very minute window to make most of the money they're going to make in their career. And yes, they make millions of dollars, but you have no idea how many of these players are lost after their careers. They have no idea what to do with themselves. They've never so much as booked a flight for themselves, let alone tried to open up a business. So these are important times where they need to take care of their family. Max Pacioretty has 3 young kids. He's got a house in Montreal and a wife, and he's earned his money. Like, this guy's a perennial 35 goal scorer. He's earned his money. So it has nothing to do with where he's at with the Canadians and what they feel about him or this or that. It's just, if you're in a position to win a trade that involves that player, you have to consider making it, because there are holes on this roster that need to be filled and he can help you fill them. So that's where I see the Pacioretty scenario going. And you talk about the criticism that he faces. Listen, a lot of it's justified. But I find the biggest issue when I see fan kind of reaction to Pacioretty or any other player for that matter is they group everything together, and rarely do they look at a game in isolation and able to assess it for what it is. Like, last night is a perfect example. Pacioretty has 5 shot attempts. He was all over the ice. Every pass he made was a good pass. That some of them were bobbled by Andrew Shaw and Philip Deneau. He gets blamed on the overtime winner, where really it wasn't his fault. It actually had nothing to do with him. He made the right play on that final play that ended up with Sean Monahan scoring, and Philip Deneau missed the trailer who was Monahan, and that goal was on him. And it's just a sample of how much Pacioretty gets blamed for stuff when he's not scoring. So like I said, a lot of the criticism with him is justified. I felt for a couple weeks leading up where he said he was playing good hockey, I didn't see it on the ice. Last night, he probably played his best game in a few weeks. I wrote as much in my column on Sportsnet, and he deserved the goal. He deserved maybe a couple of them. A couple of great saves by Rittich, who was playing his fourth game in the NHL, is the difference. But, man, like, I find it's really tough being Pacioretty or any player when you're struggling and everybody just groups everything together and they're unable to admit that, oh, he's played a good game. Like, he played a really good game last night.
Eric, as a prolific hockey writer and blogger, I'm sure our listening audience are curious to know what you're presently up to and what they can expect to see from you in the days to come. Maybe tell us about some of the articles or ideas you might be working on.
Well, I can't spill the beans on that, but there will be plenty. I do write on a daily basis, so there's always something. You know, I'm obviously following the news and anything that pops up, and I think, prided myself over the last few years at least of coming up with inside information and the news on the team, which is a very difficult thing to do in a very competitive market. So that takes a lot of work, a lot of phone calls, a lot of talking to different people, scouts, general managers, anybody who will really pick up the phone. And outside of that, you know, got a couple ideas for some neat features. So I'll hopefully be able to put those together over the coming weeks.
His name is Eric Engels. He's one of the hardest working journalists in Montreal, and you can find his excellent work on Rogers Sportsnet and on Twitter at Eric Engels. Thanks for taking the time to join us today on Habs Fan vs. Leafs Fan, and we hope to have you on again soon for one of our live roundtables. Thank you, Eric.
My pleasure.